From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Mark Fretz is the co-director of the Institute for Health and the Built Environment at the University of Oregon. Thank you so much for coming to the Oregon Grapevine.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Let's just start with that institute. What is it? I think a lot of people probably haven't heard about it. It's a fascinating title.
Yeah, it's an institute that brings together a lot of different disciplines. It's an institute in the College of Design at the University of Oregon, and it was launched in 2018 officially, but it goes way back because it actually combines several labs in the College of Design that have been around much longer. So one of those labs, the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab, has been around about 40 years, and that was started by Professor G.Z. Brown, went by the name of Charlie Brown, and he was doing high-performance building research and design assistance with projects around Oregon for many years before there was a term called sustainability. So things like passive ventilation, passive heating and cooling, daylighting, really ways to make buildings have a lower environmental impact were the things that he was doing. And so he was a mentor of mine when I was at the university years ago. And then there were two other labs that are part of this. The Baker Lighting Lab has also been a lab that's been around about 30 years at the university. It is now under the direction of Professor Siobhan Rockcastle, who's a co-director of the institute. And it is not just a student resource to teach students about lighting in buildings, but also she's doing a lot of interesting research with virtual methods for that lab. And then we have a lab called Biology in the Built Environment Center that has been around since about 2009. That was founded with Sloan Foundation funding. They were interested, the Sloan Foundation back in the aughts was interested in how buildings might have, you know, how essentially terrorist attacks in the U.S. Might release microbial agents into buildings and what might be in there. And how do we know what should be in there and what shouldn't be in there? So that was really launched in response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that funding call. And we were fortunate to be a big part of that research, one of the universities that was doing that work. And it was a really interesting collaboration, still is, in fact, with architects and evolutionary biologists. And that's really how we kind of launched all these different disciplines that we work with as architects.
So we don't just need to be worried about asbestos and black mold. There's other things we need to be concerned with.
Yeah, and it's not just pathogens. Actually, that's a really minor part of what we do. We're actually concerned with the things that we want to have in there, the good microbes. Think of the probiotics, right? The yogurt for your building. So how do we create richer indoor ecosystems microbially that are connecting us to nature, connecting us to plants and leaves and things with which we've evolved? So that's what we're really trying to do is understand the design implications for creating these, which we've learned architects can influence substantially.
Which can lead us to mycelium, because that was kind of where I found out about you, was the whole conversations of, and I knew that there were things being created out of mycelium, but not specifically at the U of O. So I'd love you to talk a little bit about that piece of how that works into building in your research.
Yeah, I think I need to take a step back because, we're working with mycelium, and that's not novel. There are other building products that have been exploring mycelium. I would say part of the work that we're doing at the Institute, well, first of all, the Institute is concerned with health at multiple scales. We're concerned with the scale of the individual in buildings, so how that indoor environment impacts us. We're concerned with how buildings impact their communities and the health of communities and where the materials come from for buildings, for instance, how those get sourced impacts communities, how buildings are sited impact communities. And we're concerned with the scale of the planet, which really then starts to get at carbon flows, energy flows. So these multiple scales are oftentimes difficult to reconcile, right? When you think solely about the scale of the individual, sometimes you're not thinking about the energy use that's being consumed to create that indoor environment. So trying to reconcile all of those scales, which is important, requires a lot of research. And so that's what we've been undertaking at the Institute. And so when we start thinking about the scale of the planet, we're very concerned with carbon and embodied impacts with the materials that we source. How do we reduce carbon in the atmosphere? We know that that is a big issue that we all face. And materials have an embodied profile. So really the carbon and energy that's associated with their manufacture, with their transport, that is something that we've been addressing because that gets locked into buildings when buildings are built initially, and you can't reduce that over time. If a building is energy inefficient in its operation, you have an opportunity to reduce that over time and, you know, get a cleaner energy grid, put more insulation into the building, for instance, and improve that profile. But the embodied content of the building, the embodied impacts, you can't reduce after it's built. So you have an opportunity to think about that initially, and that's what we've been doing. So one strategy is to use biogenic materials. And, you know, we've been looking at structural systems because structural systems have an outsized impact on the embodied carbon profile. And one system that is very popular here in Oregon, especially because we grow a lot of wood, is mass timber. And so we've been researching mass timber for structural systems in buildings and how to make buildings have a lower embodied carbon footprint through the use of mass timber.
Before you go on, what is mass timber?
Mass timber is an engineered wood product that is made of smaller elements such as dimensional lumber, which can be put together using glue or nails or even wood dowels, and formed into large panels, beams, columns. It can use veneer lumber, veneer wood, such as plywood on steroids, as somebody has termed, really into these very large panels that can then undergo digital fabrication processes to make buildings, and they are allowing us to build tall buildings, much larger buildings, using smaller trees, so you're not having to harvest old growth trees. But these smaller trees can come from forest restoration activities and produce these panels that can make buildings out of wood that are much larger than we currently, we're doing with other materials. So that is something we've been researching. And mass timber is great. We work a lot with the Tallwood Design Institute, which is a collaboration of the University of Oregon's Department of Architecture and College of Design and Oregon State's College of Forestry and College of Engineering. And that organization is really, it's really the gold standard in mass timber research. And through that work, we have identified that acoustics in mass timber buildings is an issue. And it's because wood is a resonant material. It's got relatively low density, and it's relatively not very stiff compared to, say, concrete and steel. So it transmits sound easily, and that's why we have, Stradivarius violins are made out of this material, right? Because it's a great sounding material. But in buildings, we don't want that sound necessarily to be transmitted through the floors, ceilings, walls. So it takes some extra consideration. And so we've been approaching acoustics in mass timber for a while now. In fact, the university is even building a large acoustic research lab in Portland. It's going to be called the Oregon Acoustic Research Lab, or ORAL. And that is going to have the capability to really investigate mass timber research once that is finally constructed. So there are products that allow kind of that acoustic mitigation on the market already. Many of those products, though, are made with petrochemicals. And so when we start thinking about the impacts of these assemblies, how these materials go together to reduce the transmission, say, through a floor ceiling assembly, we want to reduce materials that have that higher impact that will end up potentially causing, you know, contamination in the environment during their disposal or manufacture. And we want to think about how can we make these assemblies, if we're going to have wood buildings that are biogenic, how can we make the assemblies more biogenic or using materials that overall have a lower impact?
This is a somewhat of a non sequitur, but not completely, from a person who doesn't really know much about building. But I do know that I hear conversations about expenses going up. And part of the reason it's easy to make cheaper houses is because you use these things that might not be so healthy. So there's got to be conversations, I'm presuming, about that, about it. We're just going to mass produce, which often happens in a million different ways, that the people who have far less resources end up getting the products that are far less healthy. So where does that conversation fit into this?
Well, that's certainly a conversation that I am having. I really think we don't want to have a race to the bottom, right? To produce the cheapest housing possible so that that's not healthy for communities, right? That it's situated in, because there's going to be impacts. And it's certainly not healthy for occupants if we're producing housing with these very, you know, low-cost materials that often have toxic components. So that's something I think we are very concerned about. We are concerned about, and we're approaching. We actually have another project where we're developing a panelized flat pack mass timber house through the Tallwood Design Institute. And that one is using biogenic insulation materials and really considering the indoor environment, also considering energy use to be able to make it more affordable, to really make it higher performing, because the costs are not just about first costs, the costs are through operation. So yeah, we're having those conversations in the College of Design at the University of Oregon as well. And we're putting these prototypes. We actually have one prototype we just completed. Second prototype is getting ready to be constructed. And we're putting these out into the world and making those available for Oregon communities to be able to adopt. So that is definitely a big concern. If we want to go back to the mycelium insulation with acoustics, that is really focused on a different scale of construction. It's focused on a commercial scale building versus the smaller house residential scale, although it could be used in multifamily housing, which is certainly an application we've envisioned. So yeah, we're looking at multiple scales, and housing is a big part of that work that we're doing.
I was imagining you walking around town or a place or a city and kind of thinking, wow, maybe we could use dandelions, or maybe we could use, you know, does that happen to you, that you kind of go, wait a second, this is some, I don't know, it feels like it must be an interesting way to look at the world.
It is. I mean, I'm interested in using materials that are, you know, bio-based and that connect us to these microbial ecosystems that we've evolved with as humans. It's not novel. I mean, if you think about how people used to build, that's how they used to build. In fact, there was an article about a year ago in the Oregon News publication at the university that talked about the renovation of University Hall. And that building was from the 1800s, and they were doing renovation work and found that there was straw and mud in the floor assembly for acoustic purposes. So what we're trying to do is really recall some of these things that have been practices and then think about how we might introduce them into more modern workflows, how they might be applied with, you know, this newer modern technology of, for instance, mass timber. So, yeah, we're trying to look at those things that have been maybe lost through modernization and figure out how we can really reinvent them and apply them in today's world.
Similar to what some people are doing in pharmaceuticals, where they're finding, you know, things that actually you don't have anyway. We probably shouldn't get lost in the pharmaceutical conversation. How did you come to this work as an architect and to this aspect of architecture?
I started in the lab with the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab with Professor G.Z. Brown years ago, and he knew that I had an unusual background. And that's why he invited me. My background before studying and practicing architecture was practicing dentistry with the Public Health Service. So I had worked, you know, with a patient population, thinking about health, thinking about what patients need to be healthy. I'd also worked with oral microbiomes. And so for me, making a leap from oral microbiome research to building microbiome research wasn't a tremendous leap. And so he invited me initially to think about a study that would look at light, daylight, and its impact on indoor microbiomes. And I really got hooked with the research bug and really wanted to investigate more how we could create these natural indoor ecosystems, especially since as architects, we love to connect to nature, right? That's what we want to do with the buildings and the built environments that we create. We want to put people in that environment in which they've evolved. We've all evolved, right? And so a lot of times that is done in ways that are very visual, which is great, you know, connecting through view, connecting through maybe air movements with the outdoors, being able to open a window. But what we also want to do is think about connecting people through the microbial ecosystem with the nature outdoors. And so that's been fascinating to me to understand how much influence architects have on shaping that indoor microbial ecology. We, you know, through everything from daylighting to ventilation to spatial configuration, we have an impact and we can play a role.
Well, what do you teach? I guess, what are the subjects that you teach in terms of, you know, the conversations that you might be generating? I'm interested in kind of how the student body and how people are coming up, so that isn't just theoretical, but it's also practical.
It is. We do a lot of applied research and we bring that research into the classroom. I teach, right now I'm co-teaching a class called Building Enclosure, which is thinking about really, you know, everything on the exterior of a building and how that interface between outdoor and indoors works. And that actually, I find it fascinating because there's multiple scales involved. There's the scale of the whole building and the kind of the visual impact and the design intent. And then there's the scale of the detail and how it all comes together at that very small scale that impacts everything from durability to energy performance or microbial performance, right? So there's a lot in that class that we can really teach students, and it's been a fun class. It's a technical class. I also teach a class that I started called Design the Unseen, and that is really getting students to think about unseen impacts of the design decisions that they will make when they go out into practice. It started with a lot of the microbiome research, and I bring that into the class, but it also includes a lot of the material impact work that we're doing. So thinking about how materials and material sourcing impacts communities and occupants in the planet. So that's another class. It's a seminar class that brings this content directly to students. And then I teach studios. So those are opportunities for students to really take the ideas they're learning in the lecture class or a seminar and synthesize them with a project. Most recently, I had a studio that looked at creating a mass timber hospital. And that seems, you know, fairly straightforward, but it's actually quite complicated when you think about considerations for mass timber, such as, you know, the span to create large spaces that are required for, say, operating rooms and the vibration requirements and the infection control requirements. So we're bringing research that we're doing on that topic to the studio, and students are working together with these industry partnerships that we have to learn more about how to do this. And we had some sites that we used in Oregon. We used Oak Ridge, and we used a bin site so they could think about a temperate rainforest or a, you know, high desert site and how climate impacts the work that they're doing. I taught a studio a year ago that was about building integrated agriculture. And that is really also work that is growing out of the Institute. My colleague, Dr. Gwen Muruck, is leading that. And that's a subject where we're trying to create lower impacts with food that we consume that's more nutritious, that can be grown in and on buildings in urban environments and not, you know, shipped halfway across the world, which also has more resilient supply chain considerations. And that's work that's ongoing. We're actually planning a student study abroad in Singapore to learn from what they're doing over there. And then we bring that back into the studio, and I'll have another studio coming up where we'll have another kind of bite at the apple, if you will, to think about this.
As a person just walking around and there's a theoretical discussion here and a larger discussion, and we're talking really kind of larger scale buildings. But if someone listening to this is going, now, wait a second, I've never really thought about my living room and how I can maybe make it healthier.
Yeah.
Do you have suggestions in that way for people just to think on a smaller scale?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there are things that people can do that are very easy, which the first thing would be, open a window now and then, right? we oftentimes forget to do that because we get busy, or we don't want to let in colder air. But even a brief burst of air that's flushing your building can really improve the indoor environment. And so open some windows and get a kind of a flush, a burst of air that can really bring in those outdoor microbes. The research suggests that really ventilation is a big driver of indoor microbiomes, and what's outdoors comes inside. And so, yeah, that's one thing you can do. Open blinds. Daylight changes the microbiome indoors. We've had students walk through neighborhoods and just count houses during the days that have their blinds closed just to see how many people open blinds. And it's actually pretty low. So even though you have a window installed in your house, if the blind is closed, it's not letting natural light in, daylight in, that can change that indoor microbiome. So that's a pretty, those are two simple things. Open blinds during the day and open your windows at least once a day. Get some fresh air flushing through the house. Beyond that, consider the materials that you're sourcing. If you're going to do a renovation or you're bringing things into the house, natural materials support microbiomes that you would find outdoors. We're doing work right now looking at wood, especially with an eye toward infection control with hospitals. But wood is an amazing material. It when you dry it out and you bring it indoors, it actually acts antimicrobially, and it's actually hard to get microbes off of wood. Whereas other materials such as painted drywall, for instance, you can recover those quite easily, or plastic or stainless steel. Those transfer easily off the surface. But wood is a really great material in that way. Also buffers indoor humidity, which is another thing I would add. Indoor humidity in the range of 40% to 60% is something that's very beneficial for the health of the occupants. It also protects the buildings. If you get too high, you can have mold and microbial growth issues that are problematic. But within that range, research is pointing to that as being a healthy range for occupants. So there are some things like that that you can start to consider that we can all accomplish in our own environment.
I'm glad I opened my blinds this morning in case your students are walking by my house. They'll see that I left them open.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, hey, if you got a window and you're going to have energy going through that window, you might as well get some light with it, right? And improve your indoor environment.
I want to ask you what inspires you to do this work, and then I'd also love you to say, it's kind of two questions, as you deal with students and meet more people in the field, what do you find is inspiring them to go, this is what I want to do?
Well, the students we have at the University of Oregon are absolutely passionate about improving the world, and that's what drives me, because they are not just interested in creating a portfolio for a gallery. They are interested in really building things that are beautiful and support communities and improve the world, leave it in a better place. And that's the work that I'm trying to do as well at the university. How can we do research, like you mentioned, the housing, that is not a race to the bottom to create cheap and unhealthy housing, but how can we think about systems holistically? How can we use our own ability to think creatively to solve these bigger, complex problems. That's what drives me.
Anything we haven't touched on here? We could obviously talk in depth about a lot of these things, but wondering if there's something we haven't touched on here that you want to make sure you bring up, either about your work or about what the university's doing in this field.
Yeah, I should probably just get back a little bit to the mycelium insulation, because I digressed. We had so many fascinating
That's okay.
conversations. But, this was work. Again, others have done work on creating building products out of mycelium. That's not new. But what we were trying to do is use a waste product, such as wood mill waste, that is otherwise just going to degrade into methane and go back into the environment and contribute to climate change. We were trying to use that and convert it into a low-impact material that would have a long life to keep that carbon out of the atmosphere. And we wanted to do it in a way that didn't use binders to create an insulation material that would contribute to negative indoor air quality for occupants. So we proposed, we had a small innovation award proposal to the Tallwood Design Institute, and they funded that with support from a USDA ARS grant. And we were really fortunate to have that that grant that would allow us to explore this. And we were really fortunate to have a really passionate student to help support this, who was actually an amateur mycologist. Charlotte Common is the one that was working on this through when she was at the Clark Honors College, and really took this project and ran with it and developed all these different samples. We used wood waste, we used wood wool, wood shavings, we used hemp herd fiber, so a number of different organic substrates, and then used just, you know, common oyster mushroom and reishi mushroom as the mycelium binder for these, and then started exploring their physical properties, such as durability when you're handling these panels that we created, creep, which means how much do they compress over time when you put weight on them. Also, of course, their aesthetic attributes, but we were really concerned with using these in a sandwich application where they would sit on top of a mass timber floor deck and then have a concrete topping or another topping that could be, something with mass, such as recycled concrete aggregate, on top of that in a sandwich assembly. And so this would then act as a buffer for that sound transmission going through that assembly. And so we have a little microacoustic chamber in our Portland lab. So we have two lab locations that I should mention. We've got our Portland location, which has been around for about 20 years. And that location is really important because we want to work directly with a lot of the architecture, engineering, and construction firms that are up there, which we do. And they come in and they test things and we work in a very collaborative fashion. And then we have the Eugene location, which is really connected to the mothership down here. And so we tested these things for their acoustic properties. We tested them for their physical properties. And we ended up finding that a few worked better than others. Namely, the wood wool seemed to work really well. And it didn't really matter so much whether it was reishi or oyster mushroom. They both worked fairly well. We were concerned with, you know, time for incubation and time for dehydration, because those are all attributes that would impact commercialization of that product. So with that, we were confident that we should, you know, explore this further, and we kind of identified something to move forward with. But so that's what we were doing with the mycelium, and I think next step would also be really creating this for indoor noise reduction. So not just hiding it away in an acoustic assembly, but exploiting the visual properties of that material. It's quite beautiful when you have, you know, those really fractal biophilic patterns of microbial growth on the surface. So we hope to maybe do something with that in the future as well.
I'd much rather go into a sound studio with that on the walls than those eggshell kind of foamy things that they often have. So I'll look forward to that happening in my lifetime.
We'll try to make it happen for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark Fretz, for coming in and talking to me about architecture and built environments and health. I really appreciate your insights and your time.
It's been a pleasure. Well, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh, pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.